am I now? My name is Gabrielle Cardona, and a little bit about myself. I'm a licensed coach and a certified MBTI practitioner. I've been doing this for 16 years, everything from one-on-one coaching to public speaking. I've made my coaching program into a workbook, and I've been the president of the Tacoma chapter of the National Association of Professional Women. I was Woman of the Year, and I've been a speaker in Expanding Your Horizons for teenage girls who are looking for direction in their life. But I consider myself as a wife for 25 years with three kids my greatest accomplishment. All of those things I've been doing, they were done contingent on applying the most important lesson that my father taught me about how to be honest with myself. This show is going to be about you finding out, really determining where you are now. When I was a very young girl, he and I would have some of the most animated conversations. They would even come down to debating sometimes. As a six-year-old, I had a lot to say to my old man. Well, one day, he and I were kind of going at it. We had that playful banter, but all of a sudden, he became very serious. He said to me, "Honey, be very careful. Don't lie to yourself." I said, "Oh, I'm not. What are you talking about?" He said, "You know what? It's very important for you to understand that in life, if you lie to strangers, you're going to miss out on some really great opportunities. You're going to miss out on opportunities to be happy. If you lie to your friends and family, you're going to go through life alone, and it's going to be really sad. But when you lie to yourself, you start believing your own lies, then it's really over for you because you don't even have yourself left." Wow. Okay. That was quite the reality check for a young girl like me. So what I've been doing as a coach for 16 years is helping my clients to understand the importance of really being honest with themselves. My coaching program has been about, well, determining where you are right now in your life, and then determining where you want to go, and truly getting to know yourself. How do you move through life? And then equipping them with the tools and resources that they're going to need in order to make it to where they want to go with the modus operandi of their personality, really knowing where they are at all times. Well, what does that mean? Where are you now? There's actually going to be three things that my show will involve. Number one, where are you in the world relative to everyone and everything else? I'll be helping people understand, really define, and accept where they are in the world, where they belong. The second one, where they are in their life, relative to where they've been, where they're going to be, where they are going, where they are in the moment, and most importantly, where they are inside of themselves. Where they are as a person, separate from everything else around them. Now, there's going to be some very profound and pointed questions. Are you ready to be honest with yourself and the people in your life? Are you ready to accept where you are in the world and in your life? If you are, let's take a look at each of these aspects of your life. Now, one of the things that I really like to explain to people is that everyone has something good to contribute to the world. When I was a young girl, my mother would take me to psychiatrists and counselors and specialists, everyone from naturopaths who would try and cure me with the special formulas, and even acupuncturists who would say, "You know what? We just need to get her energy back in balance." But none of them could fix me. It wasn't until I was 8 years old that I took the MBTI personality profile test in one of my classes. I had a very laid-back and sort of progressive teacher. She said one day, "You know what? We're going to take a test that nobody can fail." And everyone got really excited. She said it was a personality test. And I thought, wow, this is different. Is this going to be like what the counselors do? Or, you know what? Let's just be crazy and answer the questions honestly. The things that they asked were kind of random and off-the-wall questions, and I kind of started to like it. But when I got my results back, I saw something on the paper that it blew me away. I couldn't believe it. How could this be so smart? How could it understand me? How could my third grade teacher have better information than these shrinks that went to school for 8 to 12 years who were trying to push the medications on me? Not only did this say I was okay, it said I was actually really good. I was just a very small portion of the human population. There weren't going to be very many people like me in the world because the world didn't need a lot of what I bring to the world. So I found out I was an INTP. The Myers-Briggs Type Indicator Personality Test is very common. It's very frequently used in schools and universities, different businesses in the work setting. But it's really important for you to always know your place in the world. If you understand your personality, the only problem is it's frequently misadministered or not explained correctly or used by people who don't truly understand it, so they can't answer people's questions. And so when people get inaccurate responses, they're very resistant to the idea of accepting the description that the piece of paper has just given them. But it's very important to know that it's got different factors, like, are you answering the questions about what your true nature is, not just what you do right now in your life? Some people think, well, my personality has changed, so what I would have done 20 years ago is different than what I do now. That's not the key to remembering really what your personality is. Just because your behavior has changed doesn't mean your nature has changed. What you do is your behavior. How and why you do it is your true personality. So this is an important thing to go into, and a lot of people are very familiar with the different terms. But if you're ready to find out really who you are, let's take a look at the dichotomies and the functional order. That's something that most people who are familiar with the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator Personality Test don't know. They're not familiar with what functional order is. So let's just cover the four dichotomies very quickly. And pretty soon we're going to be taking callers. If you have any questions, then you can feel free to call in. The number here is 888-627-6008. Now I'm going to be explaining these things. So if you have some questions, go ahead and hold on, but be ready to call in if there is something specifically that you want to ask after I explain the four dichotomies. Now, but actually, you know what? Let's even ask, why is it important to know this kind of thing? Because it's going to help you determine if you're struggling with something in your life because it's just not your personality, or because you have a genuine issue. Something that might be a huge red flag for one person might actually be pretty normal and pretty healthy for someone else. So keep in mind that knowing this about yourself and knowing and understanding other people will help you to better interact with them and move through your life in a more proactive and healthy way. Okay, so the four dichotomies are about your social energy. You're either an introvert or an extrovert. Your primary focus in life, you're either intuitive or sensory. The way you make decisions, you're either a thinker or a feeler. And the way you carry out the decisions that you've made, you're either a perceiver or a judger. And again, everyone does everything. This is not a question of functionality. It's about how good you feel when you do those things and how well you naturally do those things. Anyone can do anything, and everyone has to do everything in life. So it's time to take a real close look at what naturally best describes you. The first one is social energy. Are you an introvert or an extrovert? We have a lot of energy, and when we interact with people, we exchange that energy. An extrovert is someone who gets their energy from being socially interactive. An introvert is someone who gets their energy when they are alone. Now, some of the words that would describe an extrovert are verbal, social, energetic. Some people would think of an introvert as more conservative and confined and quiet. That doesn't mean that introverts are awkward. they can actually be very confident and very good at being socially interactive. And it doesn't mean that extroverts are obnoxious. And a lot of times they can be very polite and they can be very well behaved in social situations. A simple question to ask yourself to really determine whether you are one or the other, because everybody does both, again, is when you have relationships with people, would you think that more is always better? I can have a whole lot of friends, a whole lot of people in my life that I really enjoy spending time with. Then you're probably an extrovert. Or would you say, no, you know what? Relationships are very special to me. They're very private and they're very profound. Probably in my whole life, I would be able to consider the people that I call friends, really friends, I could count them on one hand. Now, again, another indication of whether you're an introvert is if you don't like loud noises when you're being socially interactive. An extrovert can turn up the volume anytime they need to, and actually, they don't mind doing that at all, and they can do that for an extended period of time. An introvert would say, you know what? If I'm going to have to yell in order to talk, I'm fine not talking. Are you an introvert or an extrovert? The second letter of your personality is where you focus, how you focus. We have five senses. They're going on full force all the time. Our eyes and ears and nose and mouth and skin, we're sensitive to things going on around us, and we socially interact, yes, but we also personally interact with our environment. We also have a subconscious that's taking all of the information that our senses are providing and all of the experiences that our senses are creating. On a subconscious level, we take those experiences, we take that information, and we put together a complete picture, a big picture. Understanding the interrelatedness of things and wanting to do something great with those complete thoughts. A sensor is someone who's tactile and visual and stimulating themselves in all kinds of different ways, even when it comes to something like food. They can be eating a food that doesn't taste good. They'll continue to take more bites because it's an experience about life and they're going to enjoy it, even if it's not necessarily a pleasurable experience. An intuitive is someone who would be thinking about what's going on. They would ask the question, why? And what does that mean? And how will this affect me in the future? Are you more sensory or intuitive? The third letter of your personality is about how you make decisions. You're either a thinker or a feeler. Now, a lot of people don't want to commit to one or the other because they think, well, a thinker is smart and a feeler is emotional. No, in MBTI, it's just about how you make decisions. A lot of feelers are brilliant and a lot of thinkers are very emotional. The third letter of your personality is if you make decisions based on information, based on analysis, and based on logical, rational thought, you're a thinker. If you make decisions based on creating happiness and emotional pleasure for other people, you're a feeler. I can't tell you how many times in 16 years people will say to me, well, I do both because they're both great things to do. Yes, everybody does both. And it's good to be able to do both. But the question is, which one naturally is more enjoyable and more natural for you? Okay, it would be great if everything logical and rational made people happy, but it doesn't. And so when you have to choose, which one do you prefer? Some things that a thinker would say are like, you know what? I understand that this isn't going to make you happy right now, but it's the good thing to do because it makes sense. That eventually will create happiness for you, even if it doesn't create emotional pleasure while it's coming to fruition. A feeler would say, well, no, if it's causing someone displeasure, if it's causing them suffering or pain in some way, it doesn't make sense to do it. There has to be another better way. And so for people who, you know, they still really don't want to commit to one or the other, I give them a really great illustration and analogy. Let's say you had to perform life-saving surgery on someone that you love. You've never performed surgery before and you don't know how to do it. But I promise you, I will give you all of the instructions in a manual, and I will give you all of the surgical tools that you need in order to perform this surgery. But you knew that the person you loved didn't have any painkillers. There was no anesthetic. How hard would it be for you to continue to perform that life-saving surgery on that person that you love if you knew that even the good things you were doing for them were causing them pain? A thinker would say, you know what? You just got to do what you got to do. You detach, you finish the job, and you know that it's going to be worth it in the end. A feeler would say, yes, I would absolutely do it, and I would save that person's life, but it's going to kill me the whole time knowing that I'm the one causing their pain. Okay, so keeping that in mind, let's go ahead and look at the fourth dichotomy, the fourth part of your personality. How do you carry out decisions? Okay, well, there's a perceiver and a judger. Now again, keep in mind the vocabulary of this personality profile system. Being a judger doesn't mean you're judgmental. It's okay to be a judger because what a judger means, what a judger does is they carry out the decisions that they've made in a very structured, in a very organized, in a consistently dependable, predictable way. A perceiver is someone who goes with the flow. They're spontaneous, they're flexible, they make adjustments as they go through life, and they know that rules and laws and established standards, they're good parameters, they're good concepts, but life doesn't always let you adhere to them. And so when they know that there are changes that just need to be made at the last minute, they're very comfortable. Perceivers are very comfortable. Judgers don't want to do that unless they absolutely have to. And if they do make those changes, they will have to, but they're going to be very upset that they did. Now, a couple of questions that I ask people to kind of really clarify for them, if they're a perceiver or a judger. One of them is, do you make lists? Judgers love to make lists because it keeps them focused and it keeps them organized and it keeps them really on track to get things done. A perceiver would say, sure, I make lists sometimes, but I'll probably lose it halfway through the day. Or, if I get something done, I might not. You know what? If a judger did something throughout the day that wasn't on their list, they would write it down on their list just so they could scratch it off, which is another question. When you have a project, are you more excited about starting it or finishing it? Well, a perceiver would be able to start 10 different projects and, maybe finish a couple of them. A judger wouldn't want to do that. They would want to complete their project before they start the next one. And another really good indicator about which one you are, when you have to be somewhere at a particular time, if you always want to be on time, in fact, 5 minutes early is for you on time, then you're a judger. If you know what, you get there when you get there, and if it hasn't really started without you, you're not late, then you're a perceiver. Okay, so what we're going to talk about next is functional order. Most people have got their personality at this point, or they've had it explained to them from another source. When we come back from the break, we're going to take a closer look at the MBTI profile system in terms of what's naturally more true to you. We'll be right back. This is Where Am I Now? I'm your host, Gabrielle Cardona. Welcome back to Where Am I Now? My name is Gabrielle Cardona. I'm your host, MBTI practitioner, and success coach. Now, before we took a break, we were talking about the four dichotomies of the MBTI personality profile system. We're going to go ahead and open up the lines to people who have been listening. If they have any questions about the basic components of their personality, We'll go ahead and take your call. The number is 888-627-6008. But for now, we're going to take a closer look at something called functional order. Because again, everybody does everything. It's not about what you do. It's about how you feel while you're doing it, how well you naturally do it, and how well you really do feel, how well you do it, how easy it is for you. Okay, so the four levels of functional order are dominant, auxiliary, tertiary, and inferior. So what your dominant function means is it's so easy for you, it's like breathing. If you were told to stop doing it, it would actually do you harm because you need to do it in order to feel good. The auxiliary function is like eating. It's an enjoyable experience and you can do it for an extended period of time. You don't have to do it all the time. And sometimes it could be a challenge for you to do, but it's still very natural for you. The tertiary function is like walking. You could probably do it for, again, an extended period of time, but it's not always enjoyable and it can be a challenge depending on how healthy you are. And then your inferior function is like running. It can be very difficult. It's very challenging, unpleasant, and you do need to recover when you're done. You're just never going to be naturally inclined to do it. It's going to be a lot of work for you to do. Okay, so how do you determine your functional order and what really are those functions? This is going to be about the two middle letters of your personality, the S and N or the T and F. Now, it's determined based on the last letter of your personality, the P or J, deciding which one of those middle letters is extroverted. So that means that if you are an extrovert, the letter that's extroverted will be your dominant function. If you're an introvert, the middle letter that's extroverted will be your auxiliary function. So lo and behold, you are going to do some things in an introverted way, and you're going to be doing some things in an extroverted way. The last letter of your personality is perception or judgment. Now, perception is related to the internal function of sensing or intuition. Judgment is about making your decisions. If you are sensory or intuitive, if you're a perceiver, your sensory or intuitive function will be extroverted. If you're a judger, the thinking or feeling function will be extroverted. So, if you are, for example, an ENFJ, your judging function of feeling will be extroverted. And since you are an extrovert, that means it will be your dominant function. That means that if your feeling is your dominant function in an extroverted way, your other activity of S, sensing, is going to be your auxiliary function and it's going to be introverted. Let's do that with another personality, INTP. The P in your personality means that the second letter of your personality, your perceiving function of intuition, is going to be extroverted. That means that the thinking is going to be introverted. So, since you're an introvert as an INTP, your introverted activity of thinking is going to be dominant. That means your extroverted activity of intuition is going to be auxiliary. So if we have those basic understandings of what's dominant and what's auxiliary based on the first and last letters of your personality, then there are also going to be activities that you're going to have to do in life. Even if you're intuitive, you will have to do sensory things. Even if you're a thinker, you will have to do feeling things. But the great thing about nature is it's all completely balanced. If your introverted thinking is dominant, then extroverted feeling, the polar opposite of introverted thinking, will be inferior. So your extroverted intuition as an auxiliary function will have an opposite of introverted sensing as a tertiary function because it's not something you really love to do, right? Extroverted intuition, it's something you can do really well. So introverted sensing is something that you don't really hate to do, but you're not too bad at doing it. An INTP would have introverted thinking as a dominant function, extroverted intuition as an auxiliary function, introverted sensing as a tertiary function, and extroverted feeling as an inferior function. Let's go ahead and use another example, another personality. Let's say an ESTP. Now, keeping in mind that the perceiver of that preference, that personality, means that the second perceptive function of sensing is going to be extroverted. That means their other function of thinking is going to be introverted. If their extroverted sensing is their preferred function because they are an extrovert, it will be dominant. That means that their introverted thinking will be auxiliary. The polar opposite of extroverted sensing is introverted intuition. So that will be inferior. And then their introverted thinking as an auxiliary function will have the opposite of, my goodness, I'm actually thinking in Spanish now. Okay, their extroverted feeling will be their tertiary function. So their dominant extroverted sensing and auxiliary introverted thinking, their tertiary extroverted feeling, and then their inferior introverted intuition means that an ESTP is going to have to do, just like an INTP, a lot of things that they don't want to do, but let's think of it in healthy, really, terms of what their personality in daily life needs to do in order to be successful and happy. Since the dominant function is like breathing, they need to do it for a good period of time throughout the day. The formula that I give my clients is 60% of the time that you are awake, you should be doing your dominant function, just like breathing. The auxiliary function, which is like eating, should be done 25 to 30% of your day. That means your tertiary function, that's not hard for you, it's just like walking, but it's not in your nature, should be done 10 to 15% of your waking day. And then your inferior function, like running, should only be done 5 to 10% of your day. Now, when we come back from the break, we're going to go ahead and see if there's anyone who has questions. If not, then we'll go ahead and move on to the second level of where are you now in your life? Again, the number is 888-627-6008. We'll be right back with Where Am I Now? I'm your host, Gabrielle Cardona. Welcome back to Where Am I Now? I'm your host, Gabrielle Cardona. Now, let's take a real quick review look at what we've covered with MBTI. You're either an introvert or an extrovert, an intuitive or a sensory, a thinker or a feeler, and a perceiver or a judger. Your functionality means that you are going to have to do things that are not naturally your personality's preference in daily life. And when you do those things, it's important to remember that doing things that are your tertiary or inferior function are going to be like walking or running. You might be able to do them. You might even be able to do them for an extended period of time. But it's important to remember that if you don't do them well, or if you don't enjoy doing them, it doesn't necessarily mean that you need psychiatric help or pharmaceutical alters. Right? You can actually understand that you just may need to practice those things. But let's talk about really being aware of where you are, who you are in your life. Well, think about this. Where have you been with your experiences? And this is tough for some of my clients because it requires really being honest, taking a look at some of the things that may have caused you pain, that may have been frustrating. Where have you been in your life? Well, if in the process of self-examination, your body and mind motivate you to consider one thing more than another, that's a clear indication that you need to do so. But if you don't have really anything coming to mind, some really stimulating questions, some thought-provoking questions. What are five really high-impact experiences that I've had? They could be positive or negative. What's happened to you in your life that you still think about and talk about on a regular basis? Or the things that still affect the things you do and say today? Did anything happen to you that was so profound it felt like the world stopped spinning for a moment, in a good or a bad way? Think about five of the most high-impact experiences that you've had, and think about the following questions for each of those experiences. Again, these experiences could be good or bad. Some thought-provoking questions to experience, to consider, really, when you're thinking about these. Number one. How did my personality affect my response to that event? Now that you know a little bit about your personality and how it works a little more, thinking about how your personality affected your response to that event, someone else who is having that experience with you might have reacted in a completely different way simply because their personality was different. Another good question is, what did I learn as a result of that event? And did what I learn actually come to fruition? Was it accurate or was it inaccurate? What did I come to believe as a result of that event? Number three, in what ways did it actually alter my perspective about other things in my life that had nothing to do with it? Number four, in what way or ways does this thing still affect the things that I do in my daily life? And another question, number five, does it still directly impact or affect my life today? In what ways? When you take a look at some high impact experiences that you've had and you really think about what impact they had on you in the past and what, if any, impact they still have on you, you will be able to say, I'm getting to a more clear idea of where I am in my life. Another very important factor in your life, people. Five high impact people. Write a list of five people who have personally played a significant role in your life, either constructively or destructively. Who has interacted with you in a way that profoundly affects what you do, even still to this day? Was their impact truly positive or negative? Now, we've got some pretty good questions here that you can answer for each person on your list. First of all, what role did or does that person play in your life? Number two, what is or was the nature of your relationship? Number three, how much time did or do you spend together? Number four, is it about the quality or the quantity that really makes that time, that relationship, significant? Number five, what did or does he or she teach you about yourself or life? Number six, are you still in contact with that person? Why or why not? Number seven, do they know the place that they have in your life? Number eight, if this person had a good impact, have you reciprocated? Number five, did they exit your life? And if so, how? And number 10, what is their personality, or at least their disposition? Based on what you've known from your interaction with that person, can you understand who they are just based on their personality? Now, some high impact decisions that you've made in your life. Think about five high impact decisions that you've made in your life. If you can write a list of five important choices that you've made in your life, they could be what you consider good or bad choices. What decisions have you made in your life that are still affecting your life today? Without thinking too hard to come up with them, just write down the first five things that come to mind. You might begin to overflow with choices you've made in life in the process, and if that does happen, just pick what are clearly the five biggest ones, high-impact decisions that you've made in your life when you ask yourself the following thought-provoking questions. Number one, would you make this choice again? Number two, was it impulsive or premeditated? Number three, how did your life at the time that you made the decision facilitate or inhibit that decision? How did the people in your life at that time facilitate or inhibit that decision? How did your life change as a result of that decision? Was it proactive or reactive? And how were other people involved? Who was involved, and how were they affected by the decision? Now, after taking the time to look at yourself and your life, you will have undoubtedly learned things that will empower you to truly see where you have personally been, physically, mentally, and emotionally. Your starting point becomes clear, and you will know if there's anything that you've personally experienced that you need help from an expert mental health professional to deal with. This is part of how you can truly become aware of where you are now in your life. Now, where did you think you would be at this point? It's very important to be honest with yourself, sometimes accepting things that didn't quite happen the way you would have liked them, or other things that really, really you weren't ready or planning. You know what? That's actually a good thing. Or how about with important relationships? Taking an inventory of the people in your life that you do interact with on a daily basis, what do you have really to say about the people in your life, the way you affect them, the way they affect you? When you take an inventory of your life, where are you now? You are more empowered to determine where you want to go. Thinking about those questions and how they affect your personality and how your personality affects those things, we're going to go ahead and take another break. Come back in just a few minutes with Where Am I Now? I'm your host, Gabrielle Cardona. Welcome back to Where Am I Now? I'm your host, Gabrielle Cardona, MBTI practitioner and licensed coach. Now we're going to take a look at where are you now inside of yourself? This is very important because in your world, the world in general, it's very important to know your place, where you belong, because no matter what your personality, you belong in the world with your gifts and talents and strengths and abilities. You can contribute something fabulous to the world. Now, thinking about where you are in your life, the experiences that you've had, what kind of relationships you have in your life presently, what did you think was going to happen? Well, relative to what actually happened, the most important critical thing to know about where you are now is inside of yourself. I remember when I was a very young girl, I had ballet classes. I actually had different kind of dance and music classes, but the one that really impacted me the most was my ballet class, because dancing on my toes was really, really hard work, but it was something that felt amazing to me as a person, because the teacher that I had always used the word centered. She never used the word balanced. Well, how are you supposed to dance on your toes with your arms and legs flailing all over the place if you don't have balance? No, you have to have center. I actually took my first ballet class when I was 4 years old. It's a lot of work, and you don't even look very good doing it at the age of 4 or 10 or even 12. It's not impressive doing the steps that you spent a whole year practicing. And I realized over the years that I was going to do a lot of work, but not look good doing it for a long time and not look truly beautiful, right? For almost another 5 years. We're talking about 10 years of work. That's delayed gratification, suffering, and personal sacrifice. It involves a lot of different things. You have to be strong, using muscles that you just don't use in daily life. You have to be flexible, moving your body in ways that aren't natural or comfortable. You have to be extremely focused, keeping your eyes and mind in a very specific place as you move through the music. But the hardest part, you have to be centered. Well, you have to know how to stay balanced, right? If you're going to be up on your toes, why did she keep saying centered instead of balanced? And why did people refer to it as a discipline? That kind of freaked me out too. Was my teacher going to hit us or punish us when we didn't do it right to discipline us? No, actually, I learned that discipline is not punishment. In fact, if you're being punished by someone, hurt or humiliated, it's because they don't have true discipline and they don't know what it is. But more importantly, I learned that while balance is about successfully managing the things in the world around you, being centered is about successfully managing yourself and the world inside of you. Wow. Okay. Let me think about that for a minute again. Okay. Inside of you, staying centered. Now, a girl's body changes constantly as she grows up, almost daily, and her thoughts and feelings and focus constantly change as she goes through childhood and puberty and young womanhood. Dancing demands that she not only be able to maintain the core of her body perfectly still in the same place while her arms and legs are constantly moving around her, but she also has to constantly know where the center of her body is, where that core is while she's moving. Moving her head and her back and her hips in the opposite direction of her arms and legs, but not being distracted by any of that as she's doing it. Being aware of everything happening inside of her while focusing on everything going on around her as she forces herself to move in challenging ways, but in a graceful and sensual and beautiful way, is definitely a discipline. And having true discipline means you're feminine and confident and gorgeous as a woman, even when you're not dancing. I soon learned that such a principle applies to everything in life. It's work and relationships and health and money, not just ballet. Are you aware of where you are inside of yourself while you're doing things in your life? Some people call it mindfulness. Others call it being conscientious. I call it being disciplined. Find your own true personal center. Keep yourself emotionally strong. Maintain your mental focus. Be socially flexible. True discipline is an absolutely beautiful thing, and mindfulness will always help you be aware of where you are inside yourself. Well, you know what? Your thoughts and feelings in this moment, you don't always have the luxury of focusing on yourself, but I like the example of, you know what, when you're on the airplane and they go through the emergency procedures and the explanation of if you ever had to exit the plane, this is what you do and you have to save yourself and the mask comes down. What do they always say when you're traveling with a young child? What do they say? They say, if you are traveling with someone who needs your help, always put the mask on yourself first. Why? Well, because you're not going to do a whole lot of good if you're not alive. You actually do need to take care of yourself, maintain yourself, and be able to fully function on any level at the time that you might need to help someone else. So, thinking about emotional reactions, some of the most challenging things for people to process and continue to remain proactive and healthy through the experience are negative reaction emotions. Three of them, the three most common, critical, and perhaps misunderstood human emotions are anger, fear, and anxiety. Now let's take a closer look at what those really are. Anger. When humans feel anger, it's because their mind has discerned that something very wrong has occurred and it needs immediate attention. Something needs to be addressed or corrected or eliminated. So the hormones and other chemicals that accompany their thoughts give people the extra strength, endurance, and volition to do the work necessary to identify and fix the problem that has already occurred. Often, it's the issue of a moral boundary being violated, and it has reached a point that it can no longer be rightly ignored. It's time to address this issue. If you do try to address the issue, well, you can't ignore it. Your body is going to continue to create intense feelings, graphic thoughts, and biochemical reactions. It's a very motivational emotion. It's a good thing. How about fear? When you experience fear, it's because your mind has discerned that something very bad, potentially threatening to you, is in the process of happening. You are now unsafe. While it creates a biochemical response similar to anger, it actually changes your mental perspective and justifies a survival mode type of activity. That's very different. You genuinely believe that your existence is at risk. So thoughts and feelings are intense for the purpose of self-protection. This is a critical emotion because it gives more access to your subconscious and potentially more resourceful or creative options than what you would have otherwise conscientiously, proactively considered. Fear is a very good thing when it's understood and addressed in a healthy and proactive way. What about anxiety? Well, when you experience anxiety, it's because your mind has discerned that something very bad or potentially threatening could eventually happen. And if you address the issue, you can potentially avoid the possibility of that threat coming to fruition. This will prevent the potential damage that would occur if it ever did. It's a very stimulating emotion because people don't always see the inherent value of taking action until a problem or disaster has already occurred. But the human body and mind are prepared with extra energy and chemicals, which is very beneficial and helpful because if they are used effectively, if this emotion is really maximized, you can be proactive and constructive in taking preventative measures. This makes maintaining peace internally as well as your external environment more realistic and more likely. All three of the described emotions are healthy, important, and useful in helping you to create success and maintain happiness in your life. Unfortunately, since all three of them generate such intense mental and physical responses in addition to the feeling itself, a person can easily become overwhelmed, and the initial inclination may be to deny or avoid or bury those feelings. It's actually your reaction to your reaction emotions that generate many of the avoidable problems that will occur in your life. And often, as a result, the primary trigger of the reactive emotion is not even addressed or effectively resolved. For example, your personality combined with your personal life experience may have taught you to be afraid of your anger. Or you may have observed that someone important in your life became angry when they were anxious. Or, as a survival mechanism, you may be anxious about your fear. But more often than not, people simply intensify their emotions when they don't address them, which exacerbates the original problem because it's never effectively resolved. To prevent that from happening, it's best to directly address the reaction emotion that you're having at the time you're having it, work through that emotional response so that the issue that triggered it can be resolved in a healthy and proactive way because you appreciate where you are emotionally is going to be the source of your success when you are healthy and proactive. So you're thinking about where you are now, inside of yourself, where you are in your life, and where you are in the world. Each week, this show is going to address one of those personal questions. Where are you in one of those three places? Next week, we're going to be taking a closer look at where have you been in your life? And again, this is a call-in show. This is the first show that we've had, so a lot of people don't even know that we're here yet. But if you do want to ask any questions about what we've covered this week or what we will be talking about next week, where have you been in your life, go ahead and give us a call. The number is 888-627-6008. I'm Gabrielle Cardona, life coach and MBTI practitioner, helping you to determine where are you now?